do this now while I have 2 hands. Oh, yeah, it's sad. Oh, good. Hare Krishna, everybody. I'd like to welcome to this celebration of Sri Krishna Janmashtami. It's a little belated. Janmashtami was in the middle of last month, but since nobody was here, Krishna waited for you. But come here to celebrate this event. The word Janma means birth. An ashtami refers to the eighth day of the moon. In this case, the waning moon. So, tradition goes by a lunar calendar. And so Krishna was born in a certain month from the eighth day of the waning moon, ashtami. So Janma ashtami, the time of that Krishna appears. Now, I don't know, I just want to talk some general principles about this idea of the descent of the Lord. I'll just read you something from the Bhagavad Gita. The word in Sanskrit that we use, Christians use this term incarnation. But from our point of view, this has got some inaccuracies. The actual Sanskrit word is avatar, one who descends. I know it's become an English word now. You read the avatar of arbitrage and things like that. But the original meaning is one who descends, because the idea is that the Lord, or sometimes his associates, are in the spiritual world. There is another nature. We have this material nature, but we also have information that there is another world where everything is Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss or joy. And this is the abode in which the Lord and his associates engage in their pastimes of ever-increasing love. And periodically, the Lord comes down. The Christians have an idea of incarnation, something that happens, apparently they think, just once. But here, what I'm reading from the Bhagavad Gita, in the fourth chapter, Krishna is about to speak to Arjuna, his friend, a spiritual science, a yoga. And he remarks to him, I spoke the same yoga way back many, many millions of years ago to Vivasvan, the Lord of the Sun, who spoke it to his son, Ikshvaku, who spoke it to Manu. It was passed down among a chain of saintly kings. And now I'm going to tell it to you again. And Arjuna says, well, wait a minute, Vivasvan is much older than you are. How could you have spoken it to him back in those ancient days? And this is what Krishna says. Many, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot. And then he continues, although I am unborn, or he says this, he uses this word here, Ajaha, he's Ajaha, he doesn't take birth, although we're celebrating his birth. Nevertheless, he's unborn. Although I am unborn, and my transcendental person or body never deteriorates, doesn't grow old, and although I am the Lord of all living beings, I still appear in every millennium, he uses the word yuga, every age, every millennium, in my original spiritual form. And then here's his general mission statement. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, this in Sanskrit, this is called dharmasya glani. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of adharma, irreligion, at that time I descend myself to deliver the pious. The word in Sanskrit is sadhu, saintly, and to punish the, or destroy, actually, annihilate the miscreants, duskrita, evildoers, as well as to reestablish the principles of dharma, of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. This is his mission statement. So he comes again and again. I just had the experience of trying to get into State College, riding up on 322, and there was a PennDOT crew there repairing the road. They come regularly and they do this. If they did not do this, very quickly the road would be full of potholes and cracks and dangerous, difficult to drive on. So we want them to come back, even though we're a little inconvenienced sometimes, we want them to come back and keep the road in good repair. So this is the same principle. The path of dharma, the path of religion, is established by God. It says in Bhagavatam, dharmam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. The path of dharma is established directly by the Lord. So he does this by descending. And sometimes he comes himself, or he sends an associate, or a messenger, or a prophet, or son, or whatever. But he manages to do this so that we can have some idea of dharma. It's not always the same because the audience is different. When there's a message, it has to be spoken so that the audience can comprehend it, and it can, so there has to be communication. It's a two-sided thing. So it's not always the same. This sometimes bothers people. But there is an element of relativity, even though religion is one, truth is one. Nevertheless, because it's spoken to different audiences with different capacities, it doesn't always, there's a little relativity there. But those who actually understand the essence of things can see that there actually is only one religion, and the Lord comes in different times and places and circumstances and speaks of it. He establishes dharma. But this is the material world, and in the material world, in the course of time, everything falls apart. Even that which God establishes, after a while, it begins to decay. It's like this road that's being paved right now. I'll guarantee you in 3 years, it'll start to crack and get uneven and so on. Because this is the material world. It's just a wear and tear that takes place. So similarly, religious principles decline. So that's when he says he comes. When there's dharmasya glani, when there's a decline of religious practices, of spiritual life, he comes. And a rise of irreligion, think of like a pan balance, an inverse proportion. Here's dharma and here's adharma, right? So when dharma is going down, you look at this side, adharma, irreligion goes up. And when dharma goes up, your religion goes down. It's like this. It's an inverse proportion. So when this happens, fortunately for us, the Lord intervenes. He comes down and he fixes things up. This is what he says happens. And he says, yuge, yuge, age after age, This is his regularly scheduled function that he does these things. He descends, avatar. Although he comes within the material energy, and sometimes he describes in various guises, dressed like a dancing actor on the stage, it says sometimes, still he remains the Supreme Lord, and he is actually, because he is the Lord, he is in control of material nature. Even though he appears within material nature, he never comes under the control of material nature. He's not one of us. We are under the control of material nature. Krishna, the Lord, when he comes, he is not. And then he says this interesting thing, just after these passages I've read. He says, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode. Krishna uses these terms about himself, janma karma chame divyam. He's talking about his own birth. He uses the word janma, and his activities, he's using the word karma. Those of you who are familiar with the spiritual thought in India know that janma and karma are usually signs of bondage, of conditioned life. Janma and karma. We take birth because of our, in a certain way, because on our previous lives we perform so many good and bad deeds, and now we are taking birth again with a unknown fate that propels us forward. And we act in such a way, we want to enjoy the world, we create future births for ourselves. This is normally called karma, janma karma. And he says it's a mind. But then he uses this word divyam, which means divine, spiritual. He says anyone who understands the spiritual nature, the real nature, the divine nature of my janma and karma, he says understands these, knows them tatvataha, in truth, that is to say, as they really are. That person, he says, tyatva deham punar janma naiti mam iti sojana. That person, on leaving his body, no more janma and karma for him. Liberated. He or she is finished with life in this material world simply by understanding the spiritual nature of the Lord. These are the statements of the Bhagavad Gita. So the Lord appears to us. Now, this Bhagavad Gita is a little part of a very, very big book, and there are many other big books. We have a book called Srimad Bhagavatam. It's 18,000 verses, and it describes many, 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 many times the Lord appeared. It's true, it concentrates on the appearance specifically as Krishna, but also there's chapters on Ramachandra and Varaha and Nrisinga. I mean, so many times God appears in so many different forms. People sometimes say, wow, there's so much. Oh, you're dealing with God. He doesn't do things in a little way. He does things in a big way. We are always interested to see some human being who has many facets to their personality. They can go on stage and be a performing musician, and then 3 days later sit on court as a judge, and then do something else because they're multi-talented and have so many ways of expressing themselves. How much more so with the Supreme Lord? So even all of these descriptions, they don't exhaust anything like what the Lord is. He's a person. We are persons. God is greater than we. He's also a person, but what a person. We have to know. We have to understand. My Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, when he came to the West, he said, you have heard that God is great. He said, but you do not know how great he is. And I think that's true. Unless you see what India has presented in the way of spiritual thought and theological understanding of God, you shouldn't think you know much. When I first encountered this Hare Krishna movement, I should tell you, I was in a third year of graduate school in religious studies. And my area was theology and philosophy of religion, like a theoretical kind of a guy. I wasn't studying so many religions because I was like an anthropologist, but I thought that if we want to study theology, we shouldn't restrict ourselves to one tradition, but we should do it in a cross-traditional way of theology. And I had several courses in Hinduism, but they were really, in a certain way, very narrow. I never encountered the Vaishnava thinking, Srimad Bhagavatam. So I met some Hare Krishna devotees. Now, I saw these guys jumping up and dancing in the street corner. And of course, the first thing I thought, well, I'll never do anything like that. And then I thought they had to be, you know, not very serious intellectually. Because we all know that people who stand on street corners and bang tambourines don't have any sophisticated thinking. But anyway, I finally got some books. I think the first thing I read was Srila Prabhupada's translation and commentary on Isha Upanishad, and a few of the books. And then, to my mind, this was the most sophisticated theology and idea of God I'd ever come across. I just tell you what I thought. I thought everything else I've ever learned is amateur and this is professional. That was my judgment about it. So I'm very, very impressed by this presentation of the idea of God. Same God, I mean, there's only one God. But I think the people who have researched God in India have gone farther and done better than anybody else. That's just my own, that's why I'm here, because of this judgment of mine. So I just want you to understand this idea of avatar, one who descends. We are talking about Krishna's descent and acting among us as a human being. When we talk about Krishna in particular, and here we have the little images of Krishna and Radha. Krishna is male, and none different from Krishna is Radha, who is female. And they are one, but they manifest themselves separately for the increasing of spiritual pleasure. So, this is also part of the completeness of God, because we go, you see religions where some people worship a he-god, and you see other religions, some people worship a she-god, and you see something else, some people are worshiping an it-god. But God is complete. God is he, she, and it. All of these things. There's nothing left out. So here especially we're worshiping God's personal form, not only as Krishna, but also the feminine side of divinity as Radha. They manifest together on earth. In Sanskrit, the Lord who rules everything is naturally filled with power and opulence. I mean, look. Even this little guy who's called the President of the United States, if you go near him, you'll notice that he's powerful because he's surrounded by guards and Secret Service men and helicopters overhead and limousines and Air Force One, and he's got all the accoutrements of power. Even though he's not even a king, he's just a, you know, Mr. President. Nevertheless, you know he's powerful. And even though you may not like him very much, if you suddenly see him there, you're probably going to be very meek in front of him. Because he's got power. So imagine God, how powerful he is. So mostly, We know and think of God as Almighty Lord, which He is. And when we come into face to face with Him, we will, first thing that will happen is I will say, He is great and I am really, really tiny. Now, if one actually sees God, the first thing that happens is you're attracted. You think you have never seen anyone like this before. It's not, there's no argument. You just, there's a song when I was a kid, to know Him is to love Him. So if you happen to see all powerful, all majestic, He has wealth, strength, power, knowledge, everything in full, immediately attracted. But at the same time, He's so great that you're intimidating. And there's feelings of awe. And therefore, as attracted as you are, you stay back a little bit because you're aware of this power imbalance, how you feel very tiny. So this is the situation that's there in all theistic religious traditions. But when it comes to Krishna, well, what happens, according to the Bhagavatam, is that God is not satisfied. He wants to have very deep relations with His devotees, and He understands that He's a little off-putting because of who He is. But He cannot have intimate relationships because He's just too overwhelming. So this majestic aspect in Sanskrit is called Aishvarya, this majesty. This majestic aspect, He turns down in some cases. He causes the devotees to forget that He's God. So that His other aspect, it's called madhurya, sweetness, can be manifest. This is Krishna. As Narayan, His majesty overwhelms and overpowers His sweetness, but as Krishna, same person, His sweetness overpowers His majesty. And therefore, devotees relate to Him as equals. That some take the role of His friends, of the same age, like boys playing together. Some, He becomes their child and they become His parent. God has no parents, He's unborn, but still they have this maternal or paternal affection for Him. Okay, they have a relationship like that. And He has girlfriends, of the chief of whom is Radharani. Girlfriends who sometimes get angry and don't want to see Him and make Him wait outside, and He's all upset. This is whatever feelings we have here in this world, exchanges of relationships, they are there in full in Krishna. In this world, they're always unsatisfactory. They never satisfy us. There's a vein of the temporary nature of things, and our own selfishness gets in the way. These things do not happen in the spiritual world, in relationship with Krishna. Here everything is there for real. So this is what we say. This is the Lord's situation. When we're talking about the Lord as Krishna, there's only one God. But just imagine what Krishna is, the private life of God. If you become very successful, you may get invited to the White House, or say you're in England and you get invited to Buckingham Palace for some formal occasion, and in a receiving line you meet the Queen of England, and if you're an American you have to learn how to bow or curtsy and so on, and you have to call her Your Majesty and so on. So, but you've made it, you've arrived, you've been invited to Buckingham Palace, maybe received a knighthood or an award of some kind. But everybody knows higher than that is if you get invited to Buckingham Palace for breakfast some Sunday morning when nobody else is around. Now you're personal friends. That's even more intimate. We all know that. There was wasn't there a television show some years ago called the Private Life of the Rich and Famous? Is everybody inquisitive to know about this? Because these are the people who are really the interesting places. So Krishna also has his private life. And it is said that this aspect, Krishna in his village called Braj or Vrindavan, he only shows this once in 1,000 ages. Why does God do this so we can have a relationship? We need to come into contact with God at some point. But God is spiritual, and right now in our condition, we are covered by matter. Our thoughts are material, our ideas, our senses, everything is material. How do we come into contact with Him? That is the idea of avatar, that even though He is spiritual, He manages to make Himself accessible to us even in our present condition. There are many forms of avatars. One of them is when we are just here and we are chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That mantra is an avatar. It is a descent of God in the form of sound. It can appear in any form it wants. But Krishna, God, and God's name are the same. On the material platform, if I say water, 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 it doesn't quench my thirst. Because there's a difference between the material substance and the sound. When it comes to God, who's non-dual, He and His names are the same. So He appears in the form of His name. Suddenly, we can have access. In fact, supremely portable and convenient. Fits right into your mouth. Take it with you everywhere. Yeah, more convenient than a cell phone or... Well, this is the one form the Lord appears. He also descends as a human being from time to time and acts in human society. This has been recorded. And these little images here, this is Radha and Krishna, their characteristics and natures were described, and also the Lord has said that if we make a statue of Him or a picture of Him, He'll also be there. People from the West, if we say God and God's name are the same, they can understand that. Because somehow or other, the religions that come out of the Near East, the Abrahamic faith, they're in the sound of words. So God and God's name are the same, they have no problem with a mantra. If you say God and God's picture are the same, then they get a little nervous. Or God and God's statue are the same. The principle, if God appears in the form of sound, as the object of the sense of hearing, why can't He appear as the object of the sense of sight, or taste, or touch, or smell? Why not? The principle is the same. So this is the principle that's in the Bhagavatam, that God and God's picture. Now, say we don't know what He looks like. That's not true. Maybe some don't know what He looks like. It says that when Moses went on Mount Sinai and God appeared before him with the Ten Commandments, what it says, if you read the Bible, it says that God that he could not see God's face, he only saw His back. Didn't say He didn't have a face, he just says Moses didn't see it. But He had a face and He had a back. He saw His back. For whatever reasons, that's another thing. But Krishna appeared and he was seen, he was appreciated. And to this day, by chanting Hare Krishna, by purifying our senses, Krishna again appears. Appears in the hearts of the devotees. This is what it says, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilokchinena Santasa Daiva Hidayeshu Viloki Yanti Yam Shayama Sundara Chinchaguna Swarupam Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Jana. That we can see God in our hearts as God is, but we have to have vision. What it says literally is that our eyes have to be anointed with the ointment of love. Then those eyes are qualified to see. Otherwise, you could say, show me God. And you expect me to make him appear right now. You could say, show me President Bush, and I couldn't do that either. Because you have to make an appointment and be a big donor to his camp. Somehow or other, you have to have some qualifications. Similarly, in order to see God, we have to become qualified. But even if we're not, he has appeared in certain ways. The thing is about Krishna is that he's the supreme pure. And if any way we come into contact with him, he purifies us. So therefore, the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. Hare is Radha, and there's Krishna. And Rama, another name. The word Krishna means all attractive. By definition, this is what God is. Anybody, any religious faith can say the name Krishna and believe in it because God is, by definition, all attractive. Rama means one who feels and who gives the highest bliss. That, by definition, that's what God is. Anybody can say Rama. Everybody can say Krishna. Hare is in the case of Radharani. All these names are in the vocative case of calling on. The spiritual energy that unites us with God. Everybody knows there is such an energy, and that spiritual people, although sometimes they don't know the identity. They know it's just female, like Christians used to call her Sophia. So, God is there in these names. We can say them. We are in contact with God. We may not even know it. It doesn't matter. You stick your hand in fire, you're going to be burnt. Whether you understand how fire works or how it burns, or the physics of fire or not. So similarly, chanting Krishna, we're in contact with Krishna. You see the forms of Radha and Krishna. Here's Krishna in another way. Why does he appear this way? God is not stone, God is not wood, God is not metal, God is spirit. But he can appear as stone or as wood or as metal. He does this because he says, you know, you people in this world, you are all rascals. You're all renegades. You're supposed to be spiritual, but now you can't see spirit. All you can see is stone, wood, or metal. So just to be not, I'll appear that way. So now you can see me, dress me, bathe me, touch me. This is our understanding of another avatar form. The images in the temple are not idols. They're also appearances of God. They're called Archa Avatar. Form of the Lord for worship in a temple. Another thing we'll have is where we have a feast. We have prepared a feast for Krishna. We have prepared it not for ourselves and not for you, but for Krishna. We've offered it to Krishna. He says, if you offer me with love and devotion, leaf, fruit, flower, water, I'll accept it. He's accepted. Because he's tasted it and enjoyed it, it is now spiritual. So we eat this food, we also are in contact with Krishna. We eat material food that's prepared just for material enjoyment. Every bite gets us deeper entangled in the material nature. We eat this food, every bite gets us closer to God. So in this way, this principle is that God has appeared to us to make us make himself available to us. And that's really what Janmashtami is about. It's celebrating one of the many occasions of God's appearance and making himself, out of his kindness, very accessible so that we can actually put ourselves into contact with God. And if we do this, just enjoy yourself. Chant Hare Krishna. You get a chance to bathe Radha and Krishna. Get a chance to feast. All these ways are coming into contact with Krishna. Okay? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Are you ready to go now or what?
No. It's a program. If we want to ask any questions, I'll be happy to do that. No?
So how do you define, in different stages, Hinduism?
How do I define Hinduism?
Yeah, how do you, you define one aspect as he was good looking. Okay. Now, how will somebody who does not believe in him, who believes that he is actually God?
Okay. He's asking, that what people call Hinduism, there's a lot of things going on. Mm-hmm. So, of course, it's not originally a Sanskrit word. The word is a foreign word, meaning those people who live on the bank of the Sindhu River. The word in the Vedas is Sanatan Dharma, a eternal dharma or principles of religion. So this is what's in the Vedic literature. But the Vedic literature is very, very diverse because people are in all kinds of different states and conditions. It says that the Vedas is like a kalpavriksha. You know kalpavriksha? In heaven there's a tree that gives you any fruit you want. So the Vedas are like that. In the Vedas you can find medical science. There's Ayurveda, Dhanurveda, political science, everything is there. And people are on different levels also of spiritual advancement. The idea of the Vedas is to get them on board and start people moving up. It's not a process usually of a single lifetime. So therefore the teachings sometimes appear different. But there's a lot of diversity and accommodating many people. But ultimately, everyone agrees that somehow or other there is a single harmonious conclusion, a Siddhanta, that all the Vedas are pushing to or leading to one truth. What is it? Again, people disagree. What is that one truth? Of course, this is the material world. In the Mahabharata, Nasadrishya Yatta Matam Dabinap. No one can be considered a rishi, a sage, a professor, if he agrees with if he agrees with anyone else. The requirement for being an intellectual is you have to have your own independent opinion and not agree with anyone else. It's that way now, and it was that way thousands of years ago. Experts don't agree. So this is a problem. For myself, all I can say is I have studied very, very carefully a simple book, the Bhagavad Gita. I think I've heard it in a tradition where it's explained correctly. The Bhagavad Gita is in very simple Sanskrit. If you take a university Sanskrit course, after 1 year, you can pretty much read Bhagavad Gita. It's almost written for children, practically. It's very simple, and it's short, it's 500 verses. But in the course of that Bhagavad Gita, first of all, it's spoken by Krishna, is recognized as the ultimate authority by many people, and at least a very high one by everybody. And what the Bhagavad Gita does, I don't have time to show you this now, but what it does is it really goes through a kind of survey course of all the different dharmas or paths that are outlined in the Vedas and analyzes them. And what it shows is that if you understand in depth what is being taught, if you understand where it is going, you understand the intention, you will ultimately see that it ends in one place. And that is Krishna's final instruction. Here's all these different dharmas. And if you study them, you see they ultimately lead to devotion to Krishna. Here's a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. Vedaisya sarva aham eva vedyah. This again, very simple Sanskrit. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. Eva, indeed, really, truly, it's emphasized. All the Vedas are just searching after me. It's there. And he says, finally, sarva dharman purityajya mam ekam sharanam bhaja. Here's all these different dharmas I've talked to you about. Now, sarva dharman purityajya, in other words, all these different Vedic paths are just different ways of gradually or coming one way or another, coming to me. Make a quick work of it. You can give them up. Mam ekam sharanam bhaja, and just take exclusive shelter. What he says. If you think you're too sinful to do this, don't worry, I'll deliver you from all sins. Masuja, don't worry. That's his statement. I accept it. I'm not that bright, but here Krishna's done the job of laying it all out for me. And the more I look at it, and the more I've studied different things in the Vedas, it just seems to me, this is telling the truth. So that I've placed my faith in there. I don't think I've placed my faith blindly. And in fact, a lot of the Bhagavad Gita is about the correct placement of faith, because it analyzes something. We have a certain faculty for the placement of faith. In Sanskrit it's called buddhi, the faculty of intelligence or discrimination. It's not blind. And Bhagavad Gita teaches how to develop our buddhi so that we can come to making a good choice. But anyway, that's my position on that one. We can talk until they're ready, huh? That seems to be what happened, right? Huh? In a minute. Then we'll tell you what we're going to do, how we're going to do it. Huh? You give us instructions. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question. I don't know how correct I am, but I personally believe that the beauty of a Hindu religion is that it is all encompassing. What it means is that there is one God right at the top, and there are so many other forms. Jesus is a form of God, Rama is a form of God,
yeah.
But then the contention comes in that one is a form of God, the other are part of it. I mean, what do you have to say about that? Who is the God in the big picture?
Well, one thing is, by the way, I agree with your statement about the beauty of Hinduism. I know when I first encountered this tradition and began to study it and understand the whole array of everything that came from the Vedas, it seemed to me that here was the original religion, and every other religion I'd ever known or studied had taken some part of it and run with it. But here was the whole thing altogether. I'm still convinced of that. But anyway, that's my. But that doesn't mean they're wrong. In one sense, you will see that they're just who is actually the Supreme Lord and who is not. Really, this is pretty much just like, for example, we're making the claim that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It turns out that we find out that God has certain characteristics, and we know so many stories about Krishna. So these have all been analyzed very systematically, and so it's not just arbitrarily. It's not just anybody can pop up and say I'm God. If you want to know who the avatars of God are, you'll find there are all mentioned, past, present, and future, in Shastra, in revealed scriptures. And so there's a guide who is and who isn't. Now, some people may disagree, and then we have to sit down and study it on a case-by-case basis. What can I say? But they're, it's not just arbitrary. I like this one, I like that one. They're quite formal understandings. Just like I gave you this idea of who Krishna is in relationship to other forms of Vishnu, that is the private life of God. This is not just my opinion. This is the judgment of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of Jiva Goswami, of Rupa Goswami. And they presented this idea with citations from Shastra. Just like a lawyer wants to make a case, he can't just say something, he has to show in the law books, here it is. Now one lawyer may say, I make this case, and another lawyer on the other side, no, I make this case. But both are lawyers, both are citing scriptures, and the judge has to decide. So we're willing to do that. We'll make our case. Somebody else may make his case, and you be the judge. What else can we do? But I don't think we are devotees of Krishna. There are people who are Ram Bhaktas, who are devotees of Ram Chandra. Doesn't mean they're not worshipping Krishna in this particular form. They have that particular affection for Krishna. Others are worship of Nrisingadeva, others are worshippers of Lakshmi Narayan. All of these people are devotees of God. I have my taste, they have their taste, we can discuss different things, but ultimately, no problem. Somebody's worshipping Elvis Presley and says he's God, then we have a problem. I think there's already a religion of Elvis, actually. But tonight we are going to do some service for Radha and Krishna. This is a ceremony. It's called Abhishek. It's a ritual bath where we have different substances, and that Radha and Krishna will be bathed in these substances. You want to explain? You want to do it? I've been talking long enough. They don't want to hear another voice. Go ahead.
So let's thank you for sticking in. This was really wonderful. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did.
I was just trying to fill the time for you.
We are ready in the sense that these deities are images, as Prabhu was saying, that they came here from near.